Blog Talk Radio.
Gotta love that woman. You just gotta love Nina Simone, always ushering the show in with such grace. Welcome, people, to She's Raising the Bar, Blog Talk Radio. Thank you for joining us. On the air, coming on, wait, I have the date. April 28th, we'll be on the air 9 years. So, you know, I'm going to do a special show for that because it's a long time in the podcast industry. But welcome. Thank you so much for always joining us. New people that are coming aboard, we welcome you. We hope you stay a while. Our loyal listeners, God bless you. Thank you so much for staying with us. And if you can't listen to us live, you could always visit the archives. In fact, I was going through the archives today and looking at shows from 2015 and listening, and every now and then I'll do a rerun. So you could always, if you can't catch us once, you could catch us twice. West Coast audience that are listening now at 10 o'clock, happy to have you with us. My East Coast peeps, yeah, 1 o'clock is how we're doing it. In the UK, we have a nice little fan base. And it's 6 o'clock there. So you know what? If you're having a drink, you're not day toasting. So you're fine. So thank you for joining us. And what's beautiful about today is it's March 3rd, which means once you're in March, you're so much closer to spring. So that alone, I think, mentally changes the landscape for a lot of people. But not only is March wonderful for that, and believe me, I love spring, it's Women's History Month. And it's the month that, well, it should be every month, but it's the month that we actually nationally high-five each other. High-five your mothers, your sisters, your daughters. This is a time that we're recognized for all the wonderful things that we've contributed to society. And I guarantee you, as the years go on, and I think it's only about, I think, I could be wrong, I don't want to misspeak, I think it's maybe 25 years we've acknowledged this. But, you know, again, like Hallmark holidays, we have it, so let's run with it. So high five every woman in your path today. High five the double X chromosome, because that's what it's about. And it's about solidarity, and it's about moving things forward. And we're not, if men are listening and they're walking away and saying, oh, you know what? Yeah, it's a woman's show. We don't want to listen. You know what? I always say this. We could not have moved forward without our progressive brothers marching with us every step we took. So we thank the boys that stand with us. And the boys that don't, we love you too. And maybe you'll come over to our way of thinking. And as karma always does justice, if you don't ever come across to our way of thinking, you end up having daughters. And then you're forced to. And that's just the way I've seen it played out over the years. So welcome, enjoy. An interesting aside that actually has a direct parallel to the show today. I'm in the midst of writing a book called Eccentric Behavior. And eccentric is, figured everybody knew this, eccentric is spelled with a 2X, the double X chromosome. And I was shooting, oh my God, it had to be definitely before all this happened. I was upstate shooting one of the subjects with a dear friend of mine who was also the photographer of the book. And we had finished shooting and we were in Beacon, New York. And before the drive home, we said, you know what, let's go have a bite and just like chill a little bit. It was a long day. So she comes back to the table and she said, oh, you know something? I wasn't sure what door to go in. And I said, what are you talking about? And she said, well, there's X and Y on one door. And there's XX on the other door. I said, honey, the book, XX, that's us, eccentric behavior. And she went, oh, She went back into the right bathroom. So I just thought that was just one of the funny things. And I said to myself, well, maybe this is not, maybe not everybody's going to get this book, you know, as far as the double X chromosome. But, I love it and I'm keeping it. So sue me if you don't like it. But speaking of photography, which is what I was gently moving into, today's guest, you know, in addition to being a personal friend of mine, is just a wonderful, wonderful award-winning photographer whose broad palette goes from high fashion, and lately she's been in a few different magazines, both domestic and abroad. She's done jazz, pop, and rock, and she just has this wonderful, profound humanitarian fiber to a lot of her work. And we're going to bring her on, Sherry Rubel. Are you there, sweetheart?
Hello, my dear friend. How are you?
How are you? Welcome to the show.
And everybody listening. Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Of course. You know what?
Thank you for that wonderful introduction, huh?
Oh, I know you were blushing. I could have gone on and on, but I know you look like you're very understated. You don't want a big fuss made of you, but Your website will show that later. I want before I even ask you questions, there was a quote by Annie Leibovitz, who I like her work. A lot of people say, well, you know what, she's kind of a hat, she's this, she's that. I happen to like her work. That's just my opinion. But a quote that she made a while ago, that I was just so enchanted with. She said, the thing that you take away from my pictures is that I wasn't afraid to fall in love with my subjects. And I just thought, probably one of the most beautiful things I heard. And that's, I think that has to be photography. Would you agree?
I think you have to have a passion for whatever it is that you're photographing. I don't know if you have to love your subjects, but, you know, people seem to think that I have a pretty, you know, that what comes across in some of my work is the connection between me and the subject. So I wouldn't say that that's a love, but I would say that there definitely has to be a strong connection between, what it is yourself and whatever it is that you're taking a photo of, sure.
Yeah. Well, I think, in any form of art that has to exist, I mean, in music, you actually have to love the music you're playing, because if you don't, it seems stale. It just seems very one-dimensional. And I think it's more obvious in photography. For some reason, I think that's just the way it is.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I love photographing people. Doesn't matter what they're doing, I want to photograph people, you know, because for me, my connection is to people. Now, other photographers like to photograph landscapes and things like that, and I've never really felt a connection to that. So for me, it's people. It's definitely doesn't people of all sorts. That's what I want to photograph, people. Now, everybody has their own thing. Some people like to do product photography. Some people like landscape photography, or, you know, my dad used to do a thing called heads, hats, and haircuts or something, you know, where he would it all depends upon what you feel connected to, for sure. I mean, there's always something to photograph. There's always something to photograph, and I'm sometimes like, there's nothing for me to photograph because, you know, like I can't find any people, doing what I feel I want them to be doing, or, you know, or I need a driver to drive me around so I can photograph people, and I can't drive and photograph people at the same time, or I need to go for a walk somewhere where there's lots of people, you know, because for me, it's people.
Well, you know, I love your quote that you grew up in a dark room. Tell us a little about that.
Well, my dad was a photographer, and I basically learned everything from him, working alongside him in the dark room. Yeah. Mm-hmm. When I started, I was about 6 years old. So, yeah. And again, like I said, he liked to photograph landscapes, and I like to photograph people.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the more and more photographers I speak to, We're in an age where, and I always hear the people that have done it like for 40 years saying that, you know, iPhones have changed for everybody because now everybody could filter, everybody could take a shot. And I always think there's nothing better than having somebody really look, someone who has a trained eye looking at you and knowing a good shot and knowing where to catch, you know, the catch light in your eye. I think that's a beautiful thing. And I don't think that could ever be replaced by an iPhone. I mean, that's just my opinion.
Yeah, well, that's interesting because, you know, definitely iPhones have definitely taken away, you know, many things from photographers. But definitely there's certain things that a photographer can capture that a phone can't. It's mm-hmm. interesting. I was just talking to Puma because there's a picture that we took, Cafe Bohemia, the picture of all the musicians in the group setting, the wide angle shot there.
I know what shot you're saying. That was a great shot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's a little dark. And I said to her the other day, I was like, you know what? A cell phone probably could have taken a better picture of that because the lighting was, you know, difficult that evening and whatnot. But as mm-hmm. I thought about it, I was like, yeah, the iPhone probably could have taken a better shot of the environment, but I don't think it would have been able to capture the shot the same way that I did through the camera. So, yeah, I don't, you know, it depends, but iPhones definitely, and especially the newer iPhones that are coming out with, you know, higher megapixel cameras and all mm-hmm. of these things, it's definitely, definitely challenging. I mean, people are making films now just on iPhones alone, you know, with no yeah. professional equipment whatsoever. So, yeah, it's honestly, it's a little frustrating. It's, you know, as a photographer, having grown up with photography and taking pictures all my life, it took me a long time to make the switch over from a film camera to a digital camera because I really didn't want to get out of the dark room. But once mm-hmm. I did make the switch and I got that immediate gratification and I found out, you know, how you can do all the editing in the computer and do everything to your liking, you know, so perfectly. You know, it was definitely a good thing. But with the iPhones and whatnot, it's definitely kind of a drag, honestly, that everybody can take a picture now. They can't necessarily take the same kind of photo, but they can take photos, you know, that, I mean, like family portraits, for example, you know, like parents used to pay you to come and take a family mm-hmm. portrait.
Yes.
Now,
yes.
You know, any family member can take any kind of a family portrait for their own family. You know, they don't need to hire photographers anymore for family portraits. Now, a wedding, that on the other hand, you know, people are still mm-hmm. going to want to hire a photographer for probably, you know, so there's fashion photography, still going to work with professional photographers. There's certain types of photography mm-hmm. that certainly need a photographer, but certainly children, family portraits, you know, things of that nature. And then just having such easy access to taking pictures of anything you want all the time is certainly great for everybody, right?
Yeah, well, you know, and the funny thing about this is because it's the same in the music industry. I'm not speaking for you. I'm not saying that you said this, but wedding photography is something that most photographers that I know just really don't like it because it's a hassle. You're dealing with a lot of high stress, and you usually have to pay more than one person and split the fee once you do it. And I know a lot of musicians that made money on the weekend playing in wedding bands, and they hated it, but they did it for the money. That's probably the only industry that's going to stay true to having the photographer in front of you because iPhones can't handle wedding pictures. They just can't.
Right. Yeah, and it's funny because that's the one field of photography that I really try to stay away from because I just think it's mm-hmm. a very big responsibility, and it is very stressful. And God forbid something should happen and you mess up somebody's photos on their wedding day.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like, that's the last thing you want to deal with. So it's like that's the one thing I really stay away from. You know, I have done a couple of weddings. I don't do a lot of weddings. I don't mind doing casual, informal weddings and events. But yeah, it's a big responsibility. And yeah, but you're right. It probably is one of the only venues really left, or whatever you would call it, that photography is really, well, I would say fashion photography as well. Although maybe not, because, you know, you look at Instagram and you look at all of these people that are marketing themselves, they're doing it probably much of the time with their own cell phones, and many of them are doing a very good job. So, yeah, I don't know. It's frustrating. It is frustrating. I must admit, it definitely has taken away some of the ability to make money, you know, doing photography. But photography for me has never been about making money. That's the thing. I mean, now as I'm older, I would love to be able to make a living as a photographer. But I'm just so passionate about photography that I'm just always looking for new and innovative and different kinds of projects to work on. And if I get paid, it's great. But if I don't get paid, that's okay too. It's never been about the money. I don't know if that's a good thing, because maybe if I had, you know, focused more on making money, I would be in a better position than I am today, photographically, as far as doing it. But for me, it's just always been about the passion. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that goes for anybody in the arts. I mean, most likely, unless you hit it big, you're not going to make money. But as long as you have a roof over your head and so on and so forth, it works. But now that you brought that up, I want to ask you, describe your photography style, because I was trying to think about how I wanted to frame it. And I said, you know what? She's got too broad a scope for me to say it's this or that. So how would you describe it?
I don't really have a way to describe it either. I mean, my passion, really, having grown up in the darkroom, is black and white photography. I really prefer black and white over color. Also in editing, it's, you know, more challenging to get colors right. For me, it's real easy to do black and white and work on the tones rather than the colors. And, you know, gosh, I photograph so much different stuff, like you said, from fashion to live music to portraits, you know, to tent city, you know, documenting social issues and things of that nature. So for me, it's just really about no real style, just finding something that moves me, you know, as an artist, to want to photograph it, I think, is really it. And to do it in black and white. I don't know if that answers your question. But,
No. You know, and it's anybody listening, when I was giving, you know, people probably saying, well, the music industry is the music industry. And I just want to go back and give a little preface on different genres of music makes it harder for the photographer. Now, being a musician, I could tell you, people who are playing jazz and tend to stay in one position when they play. So the photographer has it a little bit easier, where, you know, you're less moving around and there's less calisthenics with your instrument than in pop or rock, that where it could lean to you're trying to move in and get a shot and somebody's swinging their arm or somebody's moving. That's a lot harder. So when I said that before, there is a distinction in how a musician comes across on stage in those genres. And I have to say, as somebody who makes faces when she solos, you always manage to get me at a good point where I'm not making the face. I'm coming out of the face that's completely contorted, and you land a good shot. And that's not easy.
Yeah, well, so a couple things on that subject. Jazz venues tend to be pretty dark. So the things makes photographing a jazz venue difficult is the dark lighting. So you have to shoot at mm-hmm. higher ISOs, which create mm-hmm. more gain. And again, so a lot of that has to do with your equipment and where you can push your equipment to as far as dealing with low light situations.
Right.
So even though they might not be moving as much, it's kind of just as challenging because
mm-hmm.
it's dark, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So like I'm sure I was talking about a Puma where it was so dark, mm-hmm. like, you know,
yeah,
to blow that picture up or to do anything to that, you see all
yeah.
of the grain in that picture
yeah.
because it was so dark and it was pushed to a high ISO to try to get that image in the first place. Now, rock
yeah.
and roll on the and usually is on a stage with a lot of different colored lights, and the lighting is brighter. So
mm-hmm.
it actually, on one hand, is a little bit easy because you have more light.
mm-hmm.
So with more light, you can capture the movement easier because you're not functioning on such, you know, the settings on your camera make it
mm-hmm.
whatever, you know, it's more about this, the ability of the settings on your camera and
right.
where those settings need to be in order to get an image. But so, yeah, as far as what you were saying about, you know, jazz or rock or whatever, a lot of it has to do with the lighting. That's the most challenging that I find. It's not, and then of course, you know, they say also that you have to take, you know, 100 pictures to get one good
mm-hmm.
one. So,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
there's a lot
yeah.
of truth in that too. I mean, I shoot a lot of photos, so of course I'm bound
yeah.
to get a shot, you know,
yeah.
where your
yeah, yeah.
expression looks okay. It doesn't happen, of course, on the first. Now, if you're doing fashion photography, everything is posed and you've got your lighting
mm-hmm.
the way you want to set your lighting and everything, and the person
right.
is sitting there until you say, okay, I got the shot. Now, you could do that in one or two shots, you know,
right.
but as far as live music goes, it is definitely a little different. You have to take a lot more pictures to get that one shot.
And
yeah.
also, you have, and again, not to say one dynamic of music is better than the other, but in a rock dynamic, you have more. You don't have the room to move. You have, especially if you're there, you know, as you know, you're an independent contractor, and you're working for a paper or you're working for a magazine. You don't have movement. I've been in
right.
crowded clubs where you're just standing there and you can't even sneeze. So you're
yeah.
just pretty much, you have to forfeit
I'm
all rights.
I'm working on editing some of those photos right
I'm
now.
I'm
you know,
sure you are. I'm sure you
yeah.
are. And
yeah.
that's tough. That's really tough.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, dealing with the crowds. And also, well, so that's rock and roll. You're dealing in crowded venues because everybody's real close to the stage, and you're squeezing in between people and saying, "Hey, can I get up there? I'm trying," you know. But now, you know, with so many people with cell phones, everybody's kind of trying to get that shot too. So everybody's
yeah.
up close and filming and photographing and whatnot. But now with the jazz venues, for example, those venues are very, you know, very tight space. And very small, and sometimes the audience is right up there, up on the stage as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, like,
mm-hmm.
I might be there to photograph the piano player, but the piano player is in a place that I can't even get to, you know, to
yeah.
even conceive of photographing them, and I have to be on the other side, you know, shooting through the trumpet player and the drummer, and you know.
Yeah.
So sometimes the jazz venues are extremely difficult,
yeah.
you know, depending on what you're there to photograph and what your mobility ability is, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, very challenging. So, you know, so you go and you do all of this, and my whole thing about photography has been trial and error. I mean, that's how I've learned
yeah.
everything. I never had any formal training. I learned, you know, about black and white photography in my dad's darkroom, and then everything else is over the years, trial and error, making all of the mistakes. I am not a technical person, so like you give me something, forget it. I'm not going to learn the technical aspects of it. I'm going to learn it through doing it and learning the hard way. You know, yeah. So I think I've kind of like been through all of that. And so now I'm at a point, you know, photographically where I've made all of the mistakes. I kind of like know what to do and what not mm-hmm. to do. And so I can go into any situation and more or less photograph.
Yeah.
At, you know, given in the equipment that I have, which is of course mm-hmm. not, you know, I mean, some people are going out and you can buy medium format cameras that cost a camera, forget about a mm-hmm. lens and the other mm-hmm. things that you need for it. Yeah, $45,000 for one little stupid medium format camera,
yep.
you know, and of course mm-hmm. there's new cameras that come out every year. And I mean, just keeping up with it all is just extremely challenging and insane.
Mm-hmm.
And I just sort of settled on the equipment that I have. I'm too old to worry about, you know, investing in like monstrous costs on equipment. And I just do the best that I can do given the equipment that I have, because a lot of it really has to do with your equipment.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
at this point, you know, I have the best equipment that I can afford, and mm-hmm. that's where I'm going to stay, you know. So if that limits my photography moving forward, then it limits my photography. I mean, you really are kind of limited by the equipment that you have too. I mean, like when I started out in digital photography, if I tried to do some of the jazz stuff that I do now, the equipment mm-hmm. that I have that I had back then just would not be able to deal with the situation. So I had to, you know, definitely purchase equipment that would allow me to deal with some complex situations. And I think the equipment that I have now does that. And, you know, that's where I'm going to have to leave it because I can't afford any more equipment. Camera equipment is extremely expensive.
Yeah. You know, and to your point about that, I'm not going to mention the name of the magazine because I'll get sued, but I had a friend of mine who shot for a, you know, a well-known magazine, and they, at this point, if they give you credit, but they won't pay you. And she went out and got a $10,000 lens, not knowing she wasn't going to get paid, but you know what? You have cachet saying you shot for this magazine. And maybe another place in time that would have worked, but she did a marvelous spread, and, you know, she could always use the lens for something else, but she didn't know she was not going to get paid because they're looking at this as now it's independent contractor product placement. You could use my magazine and, you know, you shot for this magazine and that should be enough. And I don't think that the average person realizes what a lens costs. You know, people don't realize that a cheap lens could just be $1,200 and up.
Right. Well, that's the whole thing about like the cell phone thing, going back to that,
mm-hmm.
you know, professional photographers have invested time. Number one, I mean, I've been doing photography for as long as I can remember, my whole life,
mm-hmm.
you know, I've invested in this process of learning and growing and expanding and, you know, and then for just people to come around with cell phones and think that they've, you know, done a great job snapping this picture, even though, and it looks great, you know, it's kind of insulting. It's insulting to professionals
mm-hmm.
in a way,
of course.
Who have worked their whole life to try to get where they're at. And then, you know, cell phones come along and poof, you know, all of that hard work is for what, you know? Yeah, so it is kind of maddening, you know. It's frustrating and upsetting, you know. But, hey, technology, without it, we wouldn't have digital cameras in the first place. And, you know, we'd still be back with film cameras. So, yeah.
But you know something? I think that, again, taking a picture of a sunset or the moon or whatever, something like that, yeah, I could see where an iPhone, okay, you know what, I could take a great shot with this. But there's something about knowing your subject and having done it and to actually be able to walk a couple of steps before their move. I don't think the average person with an iPhone can duplicate that. You just can't.
That's true. I mean, I honestly would agree with that. I mean, there's definitely stuff that an iPhone and just anybody cannot do. Even when I, you know, I try with my black and white photography to you know, have like my backgrounds are real black and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of that is me taking the time to go into that image and take out anything that's not necessary to focus on the subject. You know,
yeah.
So there's definitely certain things that I do in editing and in creating a final image that I don't think the average person is going to do.
No.
You know, which makes some of my images, you know, stand out to be a little bit different because I take the time to try to make them, you know, whereas the one, you know, a cell phone, a lot of people are just taking the picture and they get what they get. So, yeah. Right?
No, I think so too, because I'm thinking about any picture that somebody's taken in the audience of me playing, and it's just not the same. It's just not the same as somebody who knows you even a little bit and just knows their craft and knows what to look for and what not to look for. And it honestly is not, I've never had someone who's taken an iPhone picture of me that I would say, you know what, that's pretty damn good. No. You know, I would never use that as anything that I want to represent me. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. 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 That's, you know, live music and whatnot. It's definitely another genre that can use professional photographers, I think. You know,
yeah.
I love shooting live music. No, my thing in the past, and I photojournalism and documenting, you know, social issues or just people on the street. And, you know, I like doing that kind of stuff too, which I'm going to do more spring. So hopefully maybe I'll be doing, you know, some more of that as well.
And you know, what's interesting about what you're saying, one of a dear friend of mine who actually forwarded a link to me this morning that I shared with you, did a book, oh my God, it had to be about 25 years ago, called The Right Side of 40, Patricia Martin, who wrote the text to the book. But when you pick up this book, and I think I gave you this book, you're hard-pressed to say, well, is it, you know, because, again, my thinking is those black and white photos lead it. Her wording is absolutely wonderful. She's a brilliant writer, but you're so hard to press when you look at these amazing black and white shots. It's hard to say what type of book it is. Is the photo leading the text? Two arts coming together and not really challenging each other. They're both representing themselves in a profound way and without any type of jealousy. And I love that.
Right. Right. Well, like Diane, I don't know, you familiar with Diane Arbus's work?
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, my dad would have, like, he loved Ansel Adams, you know, because he did the landscapes and he loved the tones beautifully and whatnot. And for me, like, my idol was Diane Arbus. I always want the weird and the absurd and the strange. And the, you know, and if I you know, my thing, I would love to be able to go into prisons, or I would love to go into, like, the weirdest places around. I remember going many, many years ago, I went to, I think it was National Geographic or Time, I don't remember, but I was trying to get a job as a photographer.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'll never forget the guy there at the desk. He said to me, well, why don't you go under the subways and photograph the homeless living in the beneath the subway. He said, do that and come. He said, do that and come back and show me your work. And of course, I never did, because it's something I would never want to go out and really do on my own. I would need somebody to be with me, maybe like more than one person. So, like, you know, a lot of the things that I would absolutely love to photograph, are these really crazy things, well, not so crazy, but in environments that maybe are not safe for a single woman,
mm-hmm.
you know, with
yeah,
expensive
yeah.
camera equipment around her neck, walking around and
yeah,
whatnot.
No.
So I certainly wish that I had people to do those types of things with, because really that's the kind of stuff I love to do even more than
yeah.
music and fashion and theater. The other thing I do is theater. But like
yeah.
the absurd and obscure and the crazy, you know,
yeah.
the deep dark places of the world, you know, that's what I would love to be doing, you know, and those photographers that are like, you know, taking photographs on the favelas of South America and Rio de Janeiro
yeah.
and going into these, you know, where I, you know, I don't know how they do it. Gosh, I wish I could be doing that type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Photojournalism.
Mm-hmm.
But I never could do that assignment to go back with a portfolio to be able to get those kinds of jobs, you know, so.
Well, you never know.
Never happened
for
me.
You know.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if you're familiar with, and I used to see him riding, like back and forth in Manhattan, Bill Cunningham, who was just an amazing street photographer. He shot for the New York Times, but here was this guy who was riding on his bike until he's about, oh my God, probably 82, maybe older, with his camera.
Wow.
And he took these amazing shots of everything. And I'm telling you, everything, the beauty and the grit of New York City. And he was not ashamed to take it. And it's just, you know, and I love black and white shots, as you know. And he just, you know, the homeless people with their animals and with their parrots, you know, on the street corner of Lexington Avenue, he got all of that. And I think that's probably the most fascinating work.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I keep saying to myself, especially coming out of this pandemic, you know, it's been a year of challenges for us all. And I'm so looking forward, like you were saying at the beginning of the show, with March coming next week, it looks
mm-hmm.
like beautiful weather. And I'm just thinking, oh my gosh,
mm-hmm.
spring is here. I'm just going to go out and I'm going to take that ride to New York that I haven't done, you know,
good.
And I'm just going to get out and walk and start, you know, photographing so much more. So I'm definitely looking forward to spring and being able to do that type of stuff. Yeah.
You know, I wish you had gotten in to New York probably even like, maybe like April of last year, because there were these great shots of Broadway. And people were saying, well, this is what Broadway looks like at 3:00 in the morning. And I'm like, friggin' no. Broadway never looked
right.
this empty. And there were no cars parked. And it was so eerie. And I was thinking, these
right.
are the shots that need to be documented. What New York
right.
was.
For somebody, you know, I'm sure people did it, you know, and it's easy for
yeah.
me. You know, unfortunately, I wish I could afford to live in the city, you know, but I can't. So
mm-hmm.
it's, you know, it's driving in and out of the city from where I am, you know, that's like an hour and a half drive
yeah.
right there. But,
and tolls, yeah, absolutely.
And, yeah. and tolls, exactly.
Yeah.
And gas
yeah.
isn't cheap anymore right now either. Boy, gas is going up. I think that's because so many people weren't going anywhere during the pandemic. You know, now they got to raise
exactly
the price.
That's exactly right.
Again. It's
yep.
crazy.
That's exactly
yeah.
how it goes. That's exactly. But see, this is like, and you know, I always think in terms of when you think about the power of photography, I always think of Eisenhower, who was not a president that I ever think I would have liked his philosophy. I don't think I would agree on many things, but he, after the Holocaust, said he sent out troops of photographers because somehow mm-hmm. this man knew that people were going to dispute it. And all those black and white pictures that make you want to retch and cry and just, you don't want to look at them. That's the product
yeah.
of the people that he sent out, because he knew at one point people were going to say, you know what, this didn't happen. So he understood the power of photography and documentation.
Yeah. And of course, you know, the news photographers, all the photojournalists of the world, you know, I'm sure they are doing that, you know.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's many, many people, that are doing exactly that and did exactly that in April, you know, in New York. And maybe we haven't seen all of those images yet, but I'm sure there will be books out and, you know, exhibits and what else, you know, in the future of the photographers that have definitely done that.
And, you know, I always remember 9/11, and I think about how long ago that was. And I had a phone that didn't have that was back in the day. We didn't have phones that took pictures. And I remember walking past cars. I was home at the time, all covered in soot because we were not that far from, you know, where it was all happening. And I remember the one picture that would have been the life or the time cover. I remember passing a car that had soot all over the windshield, and somebody wrote, "God help us." And if I had a camera then, if I had that, or if anybody had it, that was the picture that would have been, quote, quote, it.
Right. You know what? Probably somebody does have that photo, Lori. Maybe.
I've never seen it, though.
Wow.
That was it. Wow. That was the day, and that was, you know, somebody just put that there, and that would have been one of those pictures that pivots the photographer to worldwide fame.
Wow.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
You know? And I always remember that.
Yeah.
So now that I'm asking you, I'm probing you with questions. What is your favorite subject? I mean, as far as I know, it's people.
Yeah, I would just say people, you know. I mean, like I say, honestly, if I could have chosen, or had I chosen a dream profession, it probably would have been a photojournalist, you know, photographing those really challenging environments of life kind of stuff that's going on. You know, but I do love shooting live music and theater and fashion. So I really, I don't really think I have a favorite out of those. I just really love them all. And always looking for new opportunities to be able to shoot any of that stuff, you know. Like I've been working with Adrian Alatsea, who's a designer, and that's been wonderful getting back into fashion, working with him, because I had really been not doing any kind of fashion stuff at all, because fashion really takes a team, you know, makeup artist, stylist, and designer, and models, and those things are not always the easiest to come by. You're not in the field and working as a professional and whatnot. So connecting with Adrian has been wonderful. And prior to that, I was doing, you know, Tent City, which is something that I was doing on my own. I like what I can do by myself. You know, like I don't want to have to count on other people. And of course, there's always stuff to photograph, so I can always be doing stuff on my own. But I like projects. So, so one of the things I would love to do is to like tour with a band. You know,
I can imagine that.
Do all the behind the scenes and all the hanging out and doing live and then like turn it into a book. You know, that kind of a thing. But that opportunity hasn't arisen either, even though I have put it out there a couple of times. You know, so, I mean, I really can't say that I have a favorite of anything. I've enjoyed everything that I've done, more or less. I don't really like, but I don't like weddings and
nobody does. That's amazing. Yeah. Nobody.
Bar mitzvahs, you know, that kind
nobody
of stuff.
Nobody wants those communions. No, it's no photographer wants that. But you're actually, I don't know if you could speak about it, so I'm not going to mention the name. Being it's Women's History Month, pretty important project. Can you talk about it, or is this mum's the word?
I don't know why. I'm sure I can talk. I can talk about it. Working with the Berklee Institute of Jazz and
Gender
Justice.
Yeah, please. I think that's perfect for this month.
Yeah. So photographing women in jazz that has sort of been underestimated, underserved, underappreciated, whatever you want to call it. And the thing that makes the book kind of different is that I've actually gone into people's homes, musicians' homes, and photographed them up close and personal. We're not photographing them playing live music. I'm actually trying to get a more intimate feel of who the people are. So we have a deck that's put together, and we're looking for publishers at this point, people who might be interested in publishing it. So still more people to photograph. We've come a long way, and we worked through even pandemic challenges, and hopefully going to keep it moving forward. So exciting. I am excited about that, and so
it's really important. And you know what I love? It's changing the jazz narrative. And, the daunting thought is, it's how would jazz have sounded if women were more involved? I want to use the word instrumental, but I don't want to play on word. But how would it have sounded if women had a chance to take the stage a little bit more, not just as torch singers, not just as a chick singer? I mean, would it have sounded differently? Would it have been shaped any different?
Well,
it's
sure.
It's just mind-boggling.
Look at government. Look at government.
Forget that. Forget that. But see, that's the whole thing. And I think that's the most important thing in that project.
Yeah. Definitely. And I think, of course, Terry Lynn Carrington is kind of curating it and editing it and choosing the people to be involved in the book and whatnot. And she has they all have these stories, which is pretty interesting. So it's going to be mostly photos with some brief background on the musicians and challenges or influences and whatever. So it's definitely a great project, and I'm so grateful and to be involved in it.
And I've seen some of the shots, and it's just amazing.
So it's exciting. Everything moves a little slower than I would like, but it's moving. So as long as there's movement, it's all good. So
exactly. And that's the whole thing. It's, there are projects that have been held up by all of this, but honestly, what hasn't, but as long as, eventually we get there and eventually things come back to what we remember as being normal, if that ever comes to that exact, we just have to be patient.
Right. Yep. But surely, with people getting vaccinated and, of course, these new variants of COVID are a little concerning and whatnot. But, people are getting vaccinated. Numbers are going down. I'm just grateful that my family, myself, my dear friends, we've all seemed to have been able to wake up every day healthy and intact, for the most part. And if not recovered, without any real serious complications. Just be grateful every day. Keep optimistic and keep trucking on. That's all we can do at this point. We just got to keep on trucking on and look forward to brighter tomorrows.
Yeah, I think it's going to be the roaring 20s. I really think so. Once this lifts, everybody's going to be partying. I think that everybody's waiting for that to happen. It might be two years. It might be next year. But, I definitely think that's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I think if you're, if you, the younger people, I mean, I, just for myself, it's just a personal thing, you know, I'm getting mm-hmm. older. So definitely mm-hmm. this has not been the way I wanted to spend, you know, the older years of
no.
my life.
No, are, no,
you know?
Of course not.
I mean,
yeah.
we get older and we hope to be able to, like, keep doing. If not, you know, as you get older, you're doing more of the things that you always wanted to do and love to do and whatnot.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And, you know, it's tough. I think for younger people, you know, they still have very, very bright futures to look forward to. As an older person, still have bright futures ahead, but certainly, you know, the sooner the better we get this out of here.
I know.
The happier I'll be. I mean, I didn't want to go through my golden years like this.
Yeah.
You know? So no. None of us do. So, yeah, it's been challenging for sure on lots of levels.
I think the scariest thing is, I don't know if you heard today, that Texas is lifting, you know, you don't have to wear a mask.
Bizarre. So, crazy. I mean, you know what? They have people that don't want to get vaccinated because they mm-hmm. are the anti-vaxxers or they're afraid of these vaccines or whatever, mm-hmm. you know. And what are you going to do? You know, what are you going to do? It's just like people that voted for. You know, we won't even go
course.
There, you know, but it's like, well, you know, you can't, what are you going to do? And you know what, in a way it's kind of good. When I was reading about that and hearing what's mm-hmm. going on and whatnot, I was saying, you know what, unfortunately, the people that live there are sort of like the guinea pigs, you know, to see
mm-hmm.
how
yeah.
maybe, you know, what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got to learn somehow. So, hey, people still have the choice to wear the masks and
mm-hmm.
keep distancing and do all of that smart.
Sure.
And they keep on doing that regardless of whatever the governors are doing, the mayors or whatever,
mm-hmm.
you know. But the people, they're kind of like guinea pigs, you know.
Yeah.
Well, let's see what happens. You know, if they do okay, hey, maybe it means that we can do okay. If they don't do okay, okay, well, that means we better be more careful, you know. So,
yeah.
In a way,
yeah.
I look at it, it's all a big experiment.
Unfortunately, yeah. But, you know, I think that, again, you never want to step on anybody's human rights. And if somebody doesn't want to get vaccinated, you really can't force them. However, you could apply a travel restriction. And that's really
right.
it. Okay, if you're there,
right.
don't get vaccinated, but you can't come to New York. You can't go to Jersey. You can't go to California. That's just the way it is. If that is indeed your choice, look, we have to protect
yep.
ourselves. And I wouldn't say somebody has to be, but if
right.
if you really like to travel, okay, work
well,
with
and
us.
I think that's
this
the,
is what you're going
yeah,
to have to
I
do.
Think I think that's the point of them lifting it, in a way, from comments
mm-hmm.
that I've read and whatnot. It's like it's not,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's just, I'm sure a lot of people here in New Jersey would like Murphy to lift it all too, and then leave it to personal
mm-hmm.
choice. You know, open up the businesses, let them, you know, just let everybody
mm-hmm.
do what they were doing before, knowing what's
mm-hmm.
going on, and you do everything at your own risk, you know. But
yeah,
I agree with you. You know, I'm sure. I think I did. Here, you know, Newark Airport or whatever the airports were going to be doing COVID testing right there. Like you can't even get on a plane until you
yeah.
are COVID tested, I think.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So, I mean, that makes, you know, but with the inaccuracies of testing, I mean, I had a friend who went into the hospital. They took like 14 vials of blood and his first test was negative. You know, and
really?
then hours later or the next day or whatever, it was positive. So like even tests
wow.
are not accurate.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, it's hard to say, but then, you know, you can't do anything like crossing over into Canada. I know that you have to have, you have to have negative tests. You have to quarantine regardless, whatever. So,
I always say I'm glad I'm not in charge of this. I'm glad I'm not in charge of this, because it is just like we're learning things piecemeal, you know, and, you know, again, we have the economic malaise and the plague at the same time. So, my God, it's just got, you know, again, whether I disagree with, you know, the officials, I'm just glad it wasn't me, because I'm sure I would make a decision that would hurt somebody. It just the law of averages. That's just the way it is.
Absolutely. Well, I think, you know, politics over the last 4 years have shown divided nation we are.
Oh my God.
So, you know, not just politics, but lots of things. So we're a very divided nation. Everybody has their own ideas about things. And you know what? You just got to do the best that you can as an individual, you know, on a personal level. And believe what you believe, do the best that you can do. And honestly, that's really all any of us can do. I don't think any of us really should be judging each other or anything. We should just be all doing the best that we can, and have open minds and open hearts, and that's really all that we can do. And if you don't agree with somebody, or you don't like what somebody is thinking, then just don't give that person or thing energy, you know, just move on.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Totally
so,
agree.
But as far, you know, photography and music and everything, and we've all been extremely affected throughout all of this, and hopefully we're going to be able to be moving forward soon with springtime coming and vaccinations and everything else. So looking forward to shooting some more live music and getting out on the streets and doing
whatever,
you know, and you doing your thing and everybody doing their thing.
And you shot the last time we were on stage, actually. When was that? It was February 27th? That was the last time we were on stage, and you were going to shoot the next thing that we had in March, but that's we all closed down after that. Yeah,
well,
that
thank
was
goodness.
Something. Yeah.
You know, and that's what I love about photography is that we have those moments captured, you know?
Absolutely.
From that event, and it's a wonderful thing, you know?
It really is. Yeah. And on that note, this is the part of the show where I tell the guest to go plug themselves. So shout out now anything that you wanted to mention and we didn't. Website, email, whatever you want. It's your time.
SherryRubel.com is my website. And always looking for interesting projects and ideas and people who are looking for a photographer to work with them. So that's about it. You know, anybody who's got any ideas for some interesting projects or whatever, you know, reach out at SherryRubel.com. That's it.
Perfect. And most of the stuff on my business wall, my sizzle reel and my Facebook is, I would say, 90% your stuff. So if they ever want to look at your work, it's usually on my wall. So that's perfect.
Thank you for that. Thank you for all of your support and all of your friendship and everything. And I can't wait to connect with you soon.
Oh my God, yeah. Oh my God, yes. Sherry Rubel, thank you for joining us. And you'll be on again soon. And I'm gonna put your website on tomorrow on my Facebook page and the radio show's page, and people who couldn't jot it down fast enough now can look tomorrow. And thank you so much for joining us, Sherry.
Thank you so much. Bye.
And there she goes. And there she goes. The lovely Sherry Rubel. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. So many layers to her pictures, and such an easy photographer to work with. And all her information will be on my page tomorrow. If people are just tuning in, people don't have a paper, people don't have a pen, whatever excuses you have, it'll be on my page tomorrow. So we thank her for joining us, and wonderful project she's involved in. And I'm sure once this lifts, many, many, many more. What did I want to talk to you about? I remember what I wanted to talk about. My book of choice, and again, I'm not Oprah, Winfrey, and it's not my book club, but there's a book that I definitely want to get attention. It's, you know, there are so many people that come onto our TV screens that we always click our finger and say, that's a, and we don't necessarily know their names, but we know what they look like and we know where we've seen them. A book that I've read lately, Joy Lansing, A Body to Die For, is probably, if I had a bestseller list, this would be it. It's everything that's near and dear to me. It's every insult to women. It's how women were compromised in Hollywood. It just has so many layers to it. And Alexis Hunter was on the show, and she's the author of the book, and it's a love story that happened amidst the seduction and destruction of Hollywood. And that was the review I gave on Amazon. And it's just how Hollywood designs a certain way a woman should look and how same-sex couples had to live off the radar in those days. And they still do. I'm not saying it's any better. It's better than it was. Certainly isn't where it should be. And you know something, I hope I live to see a point in time where everybody could come out and be who they are and love who they are and without any pushback. And truthfully, I hate to be cynical, but I hope we don't have to wait for the old dinosaurs to die out to see that. But I think we're making headway. But Joy Lansing, this is a book to read. Joy Lansing, A Body to Die For by Alexis Hunter. If you haven't picked it up, you know, summer's coming. If you want some summer reading, it's not light. I'm going to tell you right now, it's not light summer reading because it takes you through the complexity of this relationship and a lot of many, many turns and twists. So I think that it's certainly, I don't want to say women want to read it. I think that anybody who has a heart would want to read this. It's not just for women. But I think it's something that we certainly understand the dialogue a lot better than men. It's a dialect that we speak, and we've all been oppressed at one point in some way. It could be 1% to 90% to 100%, and this is here where we are. And I think that this would be a good read for this month. So definitely on Amazon. And that's it for the show. Ladies, go out and celebrate whatever you've done, whatever accomplishments you've had that weren't celebrated, weren't glorified, weren't given a tap on the back and a congratulations and you did good, honey. Do it. Celebrate other women. Be a woman's woman. And that's what I always say. There are a lot of women I know that are not women's women. They're men's women. And no judgment. But be a woman's woman and celebrate who you are, celebrate the accomplishments of your sisters. And do it wearing a mask. Please be careful. Stay strong so that we can enjoy the rest of the year and keep us marching forward. We need as many people as possible. I'm going to leave the show with a favorite quote by Mother Teresa, is if we don't know peace, it's because we've forgotten we belong to each other. So let's take that out on the road with us, wherever we go, with every person we meet, anytime we get annoyed, anytime we have road rage, keep that in mind. It's not the anxiety that any of these areas of distress cause. So go out, make it a wonderful day. We'll be back next week. Don't worry about it. And if we're not back live, we'll be back in rerun. Go out. Make it a wonderful day. Stay safe. And Nina's going to take us home. Goodbye, everybody.